Let us take a moment to pay homage to the Lord Buddha by reflecting on the fact that Lord Buddha has strived for many, many eons in samsara to find these four noble truths and to free all sentient beings from suffering. And let us also make a determination that by being here, by coming here to practice Buddha Dhamma Sangha, which means aspiring to find unconditional happiness by understanding the Dhamma and practicing it, which is Sangha. So in order to do that, let us chant the Namaskara three times together. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Good morning. These playlists, these sermons are called Buddha's Guide to Happiness, right? So, yesterday a monk reminded me about that, and it took me back into how I started my journey, because many years ago, it was still in Corona time, 2021, I found the monastery, I found these teachings and my teacher at that time, I found through YouTube. It was just about when this playlist started, right? At that time I was still in Myanmar, in another part of the world, and I was really looking for the real Dhamma, and I really wanted to know. And so I found this YouTube channel, and that's when this series started. At that time, our Amadasana Thero, he did sermons in front of the camera, because in Corona times, you might know, it wasn't possible to meet like this. So it took quite like maybe 1 year or something like that for me to listen to these sermons, which were recorded in the studio when the Corona time was over, and the sermons, live sermons like these, started again. So that means in this playlist we have covered from A to Z. Various monks have explained the Dhamma in various depths, in various ways, and I don't know how many episodes are there now, if you would go and count. Must be probably more than 200, 300. But again, every sermon is also a new beginning, right? So we always start from the beginning. And with the collective marriage that we have, we try to understand something more. And I am here to share something of my recent practice, as well as the way I understand the Dhamma today and why we have to actually do that. Now, of course, what inspired me all my life, I mean, actually, I didn't know it would inspire me that much until it happened, right? So most of my life I was, if somebody were to come to me and talk about this thing called the truth, I would probably raise my head and be quite skeptical, because I wouldn't know what it means. I wouldn't have any relation to that. So I had friends later on when I started to look for the truth, something that I felt must exist somewhere, something that gives me answers to life in a more deeper way than what I have been known from my society. So then some of my friends came to me and asked me, what are you talking about? Truth, what's all that nonsense? Something like that does not exist. Which means, why do you try so hard to find something more in life than what we already have? Why don't you be happy with it? So what is it that we already have? What is it that already everyone has? And that is, of course, I guess that's what I saw around me. People marry, people have fun, people go out, people travel around the world. That's what I also did. But somehow or another, I always knew one thing. I don't want to end up on the, I'm sorry to say that for anyone who's above my age. I don't know about you, but I always saw in my country the people older than me, the ones who were already married for 20 years. And I somehow felt that I don't want to become like any of them. Any of them. And most of my life I thought, okay, no, not to become like any of them, just marry the right person. Then it's going to be okay. You just have to choose smartly. So that's what I thought I should do most of the times. So I was really thinking about what is the right person that I should marry so that I don't end up like the generation above me. And I think, actually speaking, most of the people are doing exactly that. Young people today, I think it happened over the millennia. Every new generation tries to see the mistake of the other and fix it. And somehow it happens that in one way or another, they're doing another mistake. Because their children will look at them again and say, see, you did something wrong. That is not how it should be. So it's like, I feel like that's something like that. So I think if you're going to fast forward in 20, 30, 40 years time, at least in our cultures, there will be the young generation, so the ones who are young now, right? So you live your life, and in 30, 40 years, a new generation will come and look at you and will say, see, these are the mistakes you did. This is how you should do it differently next time. And they will try to do it differently. But again, their children also will say the same things about them. And partly because it's true, partly because our children can always see the mistakes that we do much easier than we can see our own. This is just a general fact of life. You can't see your own mistakes. You can't see where you are blind to the life you're living. But you know one thing, that is, you suffer one way or another, more or less. But when I say suffer, at least you would agree with me that you are not fully happy. At least you still want something more with whatever you do. I mean, hand on heart, isn't it like that? So I guess, like I said, if I think about what my life would have been if I wouldn't have come in this path, now I think, I don't know how my friends are living right now, and again, I don't mean to judge, because that is not what I'm here to do, but if I think about how my life would have ended up probably now over the years, I think still I probably would have tried to find the right person, but how can you find the right person? There's always something missing again. So people are just trying to find the right one, but I mean that is because people hang so much to this idea of love, at least in my society. That is the only thing people think can bring happiness. Other thing else, already they understand it. It's not really like that. So coming to the Dhamma, I understood that the problem was not the person, never the person, never the what should I choose in my life anyways. It's more than to understand there's a fundamental problem in my mind. Because I knew I had this question. Is it hard to marry someone and be happy when you're married on the wedding day? Is that really hard? To be happy on the wedding day? That's not hard, I think. Because from when you meet somebody, let's say 2 or 3 years maximum, or I don't know, sometime, you have to be happy. And then you'll be happy on the wedding day. But how much can you guarantee that you will be happy 20 years later? Because when people go and on that portal or on that stage, or when they promise each other, yeah, definitely I'm going to love you for the rest of my life. But, and they mean it. I don't doubt anyone. So, but is it really easy to keep up that promise? The more I learned about my mind, the more I knew that, let alone I can't trust others 100% when what they told me, how can I even try trust myself? The thing I want today, what do I know about tomorrow? So when I was traveling around the world, one of the things that bugged me really a lot was that, when I was living in my city, university, I went to university and I went to the office. Something that really annoyed me after a while, when you do the same things over and over, as much as I liked my physics things and learning and about nature and so on, it was really boring to go to the same office all the time. You know, the gray houses every morning, same routine. And you keep doing the same thing over and over again. 11:30, you go for lunch, have a little talk with others, and you go back to your work. So I was bored with that. Then I thought, and I was also full of this, you know, being with people. So I thought I should remove myself from all of this and go and be alone and understand what do I really want myself. Because you know that when we're living in society, sometimes people give you all sorts of ideas. They put so much stuff in your mind, and now you have to make up what you should do, and then they also expect so many things of you, how you should be, or how you should not be, right? All these things are there, and sometimes we don't even have the time to think about what do I really want myself? What is this life actually meant for me? Am I meant to do what they say, or am I not meant to do that? So that, I think most of the time, even people don't even ask that question. So they don't even try to live up to themselves. I'm not talking about understanding the Dhamma, which is, I think, yet another layer, but just simply, you know, being true to yourself, being an authentic person, or just being a number. I don't know, that's how I always felt. I mean, I can tell you, I was, most of the lives I just did what others told me to do. I was a number in that sense. So then time passed and I thought, okay, now let me go and remove myself from all of this and do something that I really want to do and be by myself. And then I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed to be by myself and, you know, do the things I like to do. But then after a while, when you're traveling around the world, as much as nice as it is at the beginning, then I started to feel like there's still something could be better. Why don't I have someone with me? Then I don't have to do this alone. So that means now I felt like it would be better to have someone. And if I have that person and we can do this together, then life will be perfect. So then I had this dream. Find someone who wants to do the same with me. Which was not easy, because when you want to do something extreme as this, by bicycle, you want to travel around the world, you need to find someone as crazy as that to do it with you. It's not easy. Most people wouldn't want to do that. So somehow I found people who were as crazy as I was, and we did it together. And then what happened is, it was great at the beginning, but then, see, when you're traveling with someone else, can you always drive as much as you want to drive? Can you go and turn left when you want to turn left? Sometimes the other person wants to turn right. So then you have to do these things called compromises. And you have to wait for someone. I mean, these are small things, but I mean, over time they annoyed. I met people on my journey when I traveled alone on this long journey in 2018. I met a couple. They were quite from my hometown. And this was boy and girl, or man and woman. They were roughly my age as well. And I used to always talk with the boy. I think man is better to say. And he was always jealous about me, because see, if I wanted to travel 150 kilometers on one day, I can do it. I don't have to ask anyone. I just start, go my journey. I break where I want to. If I have to go to the toilet, I do it. I don't have to. There's no one telling, can we please stop? I need to do this and that and this and the other. No one is bothering me like that. So, because he had the problem, he always wanted to drive forward, but his girlfriend always came 30 minutes later because she was much slower, right? So, I mean, at the first day, I don't think it bothered him. When he started in Germany, it didn't bother him to wait for his girlfriend. But when he was with me, we were in Turkey or in Iran, so a few months later, it had developed into something that really annoyed him. I mean, at least somewhat more. So he always envied me because I was the one who could do whatever he wanted. And funny enough, I envied him because he had someone with him and I didn't. So it's always like that, right? You always see the grass is greener on the other side. And then you try to go and be like them. And funnily enough, then sooner or later you will want to be the way you were before. So for me, it was always, am I a person who should live alone my life? Because as much as I saw everyone was married, I thought maybe I should not marry and just be alone. And I met some people, very inspiring people, who lived a life like that. Not an easy life, but they did. They were famous German, what we call, very charismatic people, public people who had lived a life like that, and they showed me, yeah, it's possible. And once when I was in Myanmar, I met a man. He was a musician. He was a very inspirational person as well, because what he had done is, he also decided not to marry. What he did was, since he was in his 20s, he lived in a trailer, like caravan kind of. So he didn't really have a car, he just lived in a trailer. And when the Christmas time came, he used to travel around Germany and sell, I don't know, maybe, or make music on the markets, things like that. And in this 1 month, he could earn as much money as he needed to live the whole rest of the year, because the Christmas markets are always profitable times. So he did that. And he seemed to me like a person that was really unique. He was not a number. And he helped me a lot, actually. I came to him and told him I want to try out this Buddhism and want to find some teachers and so on. And he helped me to show me where I should go. And because of him also I am here today. But I remember that one night when we were talking, he told me that nowadays, after living this life of a musician for 20, 30 years, sometimes he's sitting in the trailer, especially in the winter when it's so cold outside, and he's looking around and he can see the other houses, you know, nicely built houses of people when they were 20, 30 years old. What they did was they married, took a loan which they have to pay off for the next 30 years, and that means while you have to pay off this loan, you're basically stuck in your life, right? You can't tell, okay, I'm going to change my job, I'm going to change my city, you can't do anything anymore, because now you're fixed, you can't. Once you have a loan, I mean, then you have decided to live a life like this. So for me, it was always the worst thing. I never wanted to do one thing in my life, and that is taking a loan. As in, taking a loan as big as €500,000 just so you can buy a house. I felt like this is, it's going to, now I have no longer an ability to choose and change if I don't like it. So that, I don't know, that is how I thought. So he also never did it. He had, but when he saw these families around him, when Christmas time, when they gather in the living room, when they spend time together, he felt like, yes, have I done something wrong? I'm here alone as a musician in my trailer. No children come to talk with me. No one calls me. So he was really actually a broken man. So within his soul, as much as, you know, when you talk with him casually, he would not be a person that where anything seems to be wrong. Just a friendly person, very inspiring person, funny as well. Just like we all are, I mean, just like all the friends you have, and just like you as well. But if you take time to dig deeper, and if you experience what we call a real friendship, you will get to know the story of everyone else, and you know that behind every smile there's also a broken heart at the end of the day. Especially when you're no longer young, because when you're young you still feel like you have so much hopes and change and ways to adjust. So if it didn't work out until now fully, you can try some more things. Some of them are going to work. That's what everyone thinks. But then when everybody realizes that the choices they have made have not given them what they want, and now they have a loan, and they have a husband they no longer like, the one who keeps the toilet seat up, and the one who stays long and at work and doesn't call, which he didn't do at the beginning, or I don't know, whatever other reasons, when you suddenly have three children and you have no longer time for anything, but you just have to wash one and then the other and then the other, then you feel like, was this really what I wanted? At least you have this question. So for me, my question was, so what should I do? Should I live alone or should I be with someone? Because when I was alone, I was happy, but sometimes I was thinking maybe there should be someone else. And when I was with someone else, I was, after a while, it would also annoy me. I would feel like, now yeah, I need some time for myself. It's also not the right thing. So that's when I started to feel like, what should I do? What do I really want, even myself? And since I didn't know the answer to this question, I was really careful not to commit myself to something where I didn't know whether that is what something I really wanted. And if it was not what I wanted later, then what if I had made a mess to others and to my life? Because that's not what I wanted. So I didn't want to cheat someone by telling something which I can't promise. So I didn't trust myself. So then luckily I found the Dhamma, which helped me to understand that that is not something wrong with me, that's totally normal. The fact that we don't know what we want is totally normal, because we are not really a person who wants one thing and that's how it always is, right? Our mind keeps changing the one things day in, day out. So we think we want this, and then in another situation we want exactly the opposite. We want to be alone, then another time we want to be with others. So neither one or the other solutions will ever give you lasting fulfillment. So now coming here, coming to the monastery, having listened to the sermons online, the ones that now I have the honor to talk for, I must say, see, attaining Nibbana is also not a piece of cake. I think you would agree with me, because now, of course, we don't have to do what the Buddha did, right? So what the Buddha had to do I think that at least he thought he had to do that was to practice these ascetic austerities and remove himself from everything and live in the forest and do these things, right? So we don't have to do that because we have the Dhamma now and we don't have to torture ourselves. So that kind of torture we don't have to do. So our path is not hard in that sense that we have to basically starve ourselves or remove ourselves from the world. What we only think we have to do is actually understand the Dhamma and practice it. So we don't have to let go of anything, which is impossible to do and not what we want to do anyways, but it doesn't work. So, but nevertheless, I can tell you, coming here and becoming a monk is also not an easy thing. As well as, you know, for each and one of you, being here is not easy. And how can you know that the Buddha has also not expected us for it to be easy? Because he has said that to attain Nibbana, I mean, I always have this Dhammapada stanza in my mind, which was the most important one that helped me in my Anagarika time, was Yo saha sang saha sena sangame manase jine ekanche jaya atanang save sangame juttamo. So it means you can win 1,000 battles against others in your life, and you can win everything, but that is not worth anything compared to someone who manages to win against himself, who manages to overcome his own ego, basically. Right? Our Amadasana Thero once told us a story about a king. So in that story, there's a king. Let's say you are working for a king, and this king asks you to go and fight a war against another army, against another kingdom. So if you are loyal to the king, what will you do? You are going to fight the war. And that is not an easy thing, fighting a war. You have to train, and you might risk your life, you might die. It's very dangerous to fight a war. But you do it because you're loyal to the king. So then, after a few years of fighting the war and winning the war, you come back to the king, and you have risked everything. And then when you stand in front of the king and you have done your job, and then let's say after 2 weeks later, he calls you again. And he tells you, my dear servant, I want you to go and fight another war. And then you go and do that also. So you fought the second war. And then you come back. And then he asks you to fight another war, and another war, and another war. So by time goes on, now the question that Amadasana Thero asked us when he told us this story is that, now if you want to have peace of mind, what should you do? Which kings should you kill? Should you kill the other kings, or shouldn't you better kill your own if you want peace of mind? Because no matter how many other kings you kill, you will have to fight another one. Your king is going to order and command you to do yet another thing. So this story is an analogy because, for example, in our lives, whenever we have problems with other people as well, what our mind asks us to do is always to retaliate, to change the outside world. Basically, you know, every problem we have in our lives is my expectation versus the world. And there are always two choices, changing the world or changing myself. And the king within us always asks us to change the world. That can be in the form of a desire, it could be in the form of an aversion, it doesn't matter, either one or the other. Right? So sometimes our place is not good enough. Sometimes people are not good enough. That's why we all as humanity always engage in the only thing that we do is changing the world constantly. Because most people, they listen to their king. But now, when you understand more and more that the problem is not the other kings and the other kingdoms, the problem is my own king, now you will turn around and try to fight him. And then we can call that fighting to attain Nibbana, but that is also not an easy thing to do. Fighting your own king. So, however, I was thinking in this week, now, why is this path? So I feel, for example, for a foreigner to come to here, there are additional difficulties we have to face, which are not anyone's fault other than, at the end of the day, our vipaka. For example, there's a language barrier, right? Obviously. Culturally, there are also some things we have to learn. And many things like walking barefoot. I mean, these are maybe also problems everyone has to face when coming here. But I'm just saying, I was wondering, why these difficulties? In the sense that, what have I done that I have to go through these things in the samsara? Because it must be because of something I have done. So then I reflected. And for example, why has the Dhamma come to the people in here? I think when you know the people in here, when you know the Sri Lankan culture and everything, you know why. Because of the qualities of their heart, people's goodness, which makes this place the most deserving place for this to happen. So I was thinking, why these difficulties? And then I realized that I think once upon a time we were all the same. We were all somewhere and we were all equal. But what happens is, over time, we take different views, different ideas as to how to live our lives. And one of the most dangerous views you can take, and that is something, so I was thinking about this question, why was I born in Germany? Because there must be a reason. Because we always, based on what we practice, based on how we think, we always gather with people who think likewise, right? We're always attracted to these places. So then I was thinking, what was I practicing for me to be born in Germany and to face an additional struggle in practicing the path? And then I realized that, why are you born in Germany? What is the thing that makes you be born there? Of course, some amount of merits, of course, always involved, but the point is, the realization I had was, actually, when you seek refuge, not in the nature, right, nature in being a good person, but if you seek refuge in technology, as well as money, as well as knowledge, this is what I found. I thought, whenever we seek refuge in these three things, and that's what I must have done. Not in this life, I'm saying in this journey of samsara. Whenever people told us, see, your solution to your problem is knowledge. Your solution to your problem is technology. Your solution to your problem is money. Whenever we believed that, haven't we sacrificed being good to human to some extent for these three things? Of course we have. We always do. We all have done it to some extent, but I think especially, I mean, the more you practice, the more you seek refuge in these three things, the more the humanity will reduce within you. Because, I mean, we can see that now. See, for example, today, if I think about my life in Germany, when I was a student, everyone had a comfortable life, everyone has its apartment, has its TV and internet, can use a laptop to connect with his friends, and has his phone. See, when you're going to the metro, everyone has his phone, right? So does anyone have to talk with each other? No. But however, everyone feels the coldness. The coldness that everyone lives by himself. Everyone lives in a bubble. So that is something everyone feels, but no one really needs to do anything because of the phone that they have. Everyone has its apartment with its TV, so why talk with the neighbors? And so the heart becomes cold. So For me, actually, a constant reminder on this path is this realization that most of my life I have thought, and I think you also might have thought this, because, for example, some of you have gone to foreign countries, or maybe had the wish to do so. That's also because somehow or another, our feeling is that these three things can be a refuge to our happiness. The money, knowledge, or technology. So that's why when I would talk to German people, sometimes I think they wouldn't understand that they are not the solution. Right? These are always replacements for a real solution when we don't have it. So sometimes technology is a very expensive answer to solve a problem within you that you could easily solve if you have more goodness within you, if your mind is more pure. But people don't see a problem with it, and I also didn't see a problem with it, so it happens, keeps happening. And let me share with you another thought I had this week, which I also learned a lot about. And then I'm going to use that to explain you a bit about the Dhamma as well. So, something I have not learned so much in my culture is, I mean, I have learned it to some extent, but I can't say too much, although, so, there is the value of parents. Very, maybe a boring topic for some of you, I don't know, because you might have talked about these things so many times, I don't know, but this week I met a monk, and this monk is involved in spreading the Dhamma to China. So he wants to explain the Dhamma to people in China, but he told me, before we explain the Dhamma, we have to make people's mind ready for it. So he said, what you need to have to, for your mind to be ready for to taking the Dhamma is to understand the value of parents. And then I asked him, can you explain me what do you mean when you say that? Because I understand it, but I feel I can understand it better. So then he gave me a nice example, which helped me better to understand it. I'm not saying I understand it to the extent I can, so, but it's a good way to contemplate for me. So he told me, think about, if you think in a very, very normal, like forget all the Dhamma you have learned, and just think as we would all normally do, see, there are always things in our lives which we really, really value a lot, which are very close to our heart. For some of you, it might be the holidays you spend with your partner or family in some places. For some of you, it might have been family, friends. There are always experiences which are very important to us. We are grateful to these people. For example, when we can marry someone and we can have a great holiday, maybe. I know people, a friend of mine, that's what they love to do. They love to go on holiday and camp for 2 or 3 weeks with their partner. So it's easy to be grateful to our partner for being with them, to our family. Like our partners and children, we can be grateful to them, but we can be grateful for all the good things that we have gotten from our teachers or any good experiences we had. But all of this is only possible because we have eyes, right? We have ears, we have nose, we have a tongue, and we have a body. If you don't have these, what's the value of a husband? What's the value of a friend without these five things? what can your friend do to you when you when you don't have that? What can a family bring you if you don't have these? Nothing, right? So whatever we are grateful for, without these senses, they would be so meaningless. So that means everything rests upon the idea that we have senses in the first place. Because if you don't have, when I say senses, what does it mean? You have a life. If you don't have a life, what's the point of a husband, friend, or whatever you love, whatever is important to you? So that's what the monk explained to me, and then it naturally came to this point where I understood, yeah, of course. Then who gave us the senses? Who made us, who gave us the chance to have a human life like this? This was our parents. What I'm saying is, there were two people who gave us the chance to be born in this way. They gave us this body. I'm not talking about the fact that they have raised you and, you know, spend maybe sleepless nights driving you to the hospital when you were sick as a child, or fed you. These are all good things again, but they're also additional things, because the point is you are alive as a human. And if you know about samsara, you know that before, I mean, what's the alternative to being a human? To having a body? Most of the times it means you are just a human Gandhava, which means you are a human but you don't have a body. See, there are many humans who don't have a body around us. We can't see them, but they are there. But for them, the problem they have is maybe it takes them hundreds of years to have a body itself. Because to have a body alone, you need a lot of merits as well. See, you need to have given something to someone, need to have helped someone to a certain extent, actually a lot, so that he or she owes you something, so that he or she has to give birth to you in that way. So without merits, you can't have a body even. And the thing is, as a Gandhava, imagine you are a human, like your mind, your thoughts, everything is the same like it is today, but the wantings you have are the same like now, but you don't have a body to use. So you see a cake, but can you eat it? No. You see your mother, and can you go and touch her? No. Or you see a person you love, you can't touch. You can't touch them, or you can't taste anything. So that's why, with the same mindset that we have, but without a body, it would be cruel. It would be very cruel. It would be very, very not a nice life. So this Gandhava life is a very unfortunate life, because you have to wait for a way to be born. Other than that, what's the point of having it? So, because sometimes people tell me, yeah, this human life, isn't it a lot of suffering? Why should I be grateful to my mother and father, because they gave me only suffering? Now I'm here and I have to suffer. So how can I be grateful for this life if this life is suffering? And then I would tell them, yes, if we go on to understand the Dhamma, we understand that our life is also, there's suffering, that's true, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be grateful to your mother and father, because the alternative is even worse. If they wouldn't have given you the chance to be born, especially in the Buddha's time, where the teachings exist, where you can attain Nirvana, then you would suffer even much, much more than that. So these were the things which I... not all of the things were new to me, most of the things I had somehow knew, but especially this point that, you know, even think about some people who they don't... There were things with their mother or father which were not nice. Sometimes they didn't treat them well. They didn't care about them for some extent. So it's easy to feel the grudge and feel this negativity to the parents. But what the monk told me is that, so imagine if your mother gives birth to you and she lets you, She just leaves you at some place. She just leaves you on the street. And later you find her again. And you might have gone through a lot of hardship because of that, because of what happened after that, many things. And then naturally you feel like, why? How can I have any reason to be grateful to her? Because what did she do to me? But when I got this point that, see, anything and everything always rests upon the fact that you can do anything, that you are right now here and you can live at least. You have the life, which is a great opportunity. If, see, the infinite value of this is, or the infinite of this extreme value is in the fact that you are alive, not what happened after that. See, we have to be grateful to our mother and father, especially because they gave us the life itself. Not because necessarily they have fed us and did all the things after that, which is also very important, but still, that is also something someone else can do. But this doesn't deserve... That's why your mother gives birth to you, and she leaves you, and later on, for some reason or another, you kill her, still you go to the four great hells, because it's still anantarya papa karma. It's still a karma that is so strong that you are born in the four great hells immediately after you die. So, because the value is not in what she had done after she gave birth to you, the value is that she has given you the life itself. And if you deny that, that means we don't see, and now we can slowly come to the Dhamma as well, we don't see that if we are all connected in nature, that means for us to be here right now, there are so many causes which come and play a part in this. And if we deny that, if we deny the fact that we are all connected, that's when we sin against nature. Because now we feel that, yeah, I'm like this because I can be like this. So imagine a person who goes on to earn a lot of money, who is very smart, and he can, you know, do a lot of, you know, maybe, let's say, Mark Zuckerberg, just an example. If he were to say, see what I have done, all these things I have done, how much I have done for the world, and these were all my ideas, all these things. Could he do any of these things without others, his teachers at least, who taught him things? And even if he didn't have teachers who taught him in school, maybe he dropped out of school, I don't know, at least he went to the internet and Googled something. So there were things he read that taught him things. So then his teachers might have been the internet, someone who put the content into the internet. So, and even for any idea that comes to us, where we say now, see what good idea I had, why did it come to you? Why doesn't it come to others? Right? See, I remember reading stories of famous scientists who talked about how they discovered something new. So they went and had a walk on the beach. Suddenly they had an idea. And this idea was so good, they won the Nobel Prize for that. But why did it come to them, and why doesn't it come to you when you're having a walk? Or to me? It's because they have practiced certain things, a certain mindset, which makes them eligible to get this knowledge. And practicing this mindset means you must have gotten views and drushtis from others. Again, who are your teachers? So even Albert Einstein, even though he has found some of these things himself, so-called himself, he had learned so much all his life to come ready to that point. So he has to be grateful for so many people. In other words, whenever we reject the fact that we are all connected in some way, that we can be who we are just because we are like this, we can earn this money today because it's our knowledge. We don't have the gratitude to see the roots, right? If we cut off the roots of why we can be here, that's when we cause a lot of suffering to ourselves, when we don't have this ability to be grateful. And Well, we can be grateful for our teachers, but what value is there in our teachers without our parents again? Because what can a science teacher do to you without you having ears to listen to him? Again, he can't do anything. So this was also something I was thinking this week. And when I was thinking about it like this, I had a deeper understanding. When the Buddha preaches to people, to us, and at the beginning of going on this path, we learn that you should respect your parents. But I think when the Buddha talked about these things to others, what he really, really meant was far beyond what we can see when we hear the words. When we hear you should respect your mother and father, now immediately what comes into our mind is that he's talking about people, right? Mother and father, these are persons. And we should respect them. But there are much more deeper layers to this than what we hear. One of the facts that he talks about is, of course, this sansaric debts. The fact that we all have debts to each other and, there's a process of energy. So this is one way to understand it. But I'm not going to go into this direction today that much. Actually, everything in our lives happens because of sansaric debts. The people that we meet, the friends we make, the people we hate, and why our parents became our parents also, is because of a tendency in nature of certain energies to come together, which is another word for sansaric debts. Today I wanted to talk with you about another way to see what it means to worship your parents, because when the Buddha says you should accept your mothers and fathers, you should be grateful to them. See, there's another way to understand this in a very deep way. Not complicated way, but in a deep way which connects to our understanding of anicca, dukkha and anatta. So I'm going to try and explain this to you today a bit more. So we know, or we have to understand, what the Buddha tried to explain us is anicca, dukkha and anatta. When he's talking about anicca, he means that everything in this world is a formation of causes. So it's a formation. So I'll give you one example. We had it in this morning. If I ask you about when you use your phone and you write messages, right? You're writing a message. Let's say you're using a messenger. See, when somebody writes you a message and it appears on your phone, where did that message come from? I mean, what do you feel? If somebody writes you a message, then who sent you the message? Let's say you're writing with your brother in the UK, as an example. So where did that message come from? Where was it sent off? It was sent there. It came from him, right? So we feel... That's the right spelling, right? Message. So what we feel is, the message goes from him. Where does it go? First it goes to some kind of a mobile network tower. I'm going to skip most of the parts in the meantime because it's unnecessary details, but in general, there's a mobile network tower. From him, from there, it goes through a wire through the Atlantic Ocean, right? And then from the Atlantic Ocean, it goes to Sri Lanka. And somewhere in Sri Lanka, it goes to another network tower, which is nearby here. And that one sends the message to your phone. So I can actually trace the message. See, it's going all along here. So there's it goes through the air, the message, and then from the message, the tower goes, it goes through the ocean as well. See, the same message travels all over the world and reaches your phone. So that's how we usually think our, that's how we usually believe the world works, right? So didn't you feel that most of, I mean, all of your life, messages are things you receive from somewhere? You would never say that these are just things which pop out of nowhere, right? I mean, not out of nowhere, but which are formations. I mean, this idea doesn't cross our mind. So we feel that it is within that signal of this tower that this message is already in there, right? So, well, the Buddha tried to explain us this, that that is not true. That actually, see, what you see on your screen comes into being then and there in this moment when some causes come together. So for the message that you see on your screen, what are the causes for that? See, for the message that you see, there is definitely some kind of a signal from the mobile network tower. There's a signal. But don't you need, I mean, someone has programmed this, let's say we take a messenger app called WhatsApp. So when somebody has used, so there's an application, it has been programmed in a certain way. And depending on how it is programmed, whatever the signal will be transformed into some kind of a, you know, what you can read. I mean, this programming is very important. If I change the program, the same signal will give me rubbish, isn't it? See, which means doesn't it show to us that the signal has no message? So, because, you know, by that logic, what happens if this network tower here, so when it sends your, so what does it send to your phone? A message. But don't you think that this network tower also is hitting the plants around you? The signals of the network tower, do they only come to your phone? They also hit our bodies, right? I mean, I remember a time in my university times, there was a woman in our city. What she did was, she said, these network and mobile networks, these are so dangerous because they cause cancer. So what she did was, she built herself a nice house and put a lot of, let's say, aluminium sheets all over her apartment, so she was living in a kind of a silver cave, because she didn't want to get cancer from the towers. So where did the cancer come from? From the towers. So then why does your phone not get any cancer? So what is it sending in the signals? Is it sending cancer and messages? Why does the phone get only the message but not the cancer? And why do you get only the cancer but not the message? Would be nice if we can get the message, then we don't have to have a phone, right? So there's something wrong here. Does the cancer come from the tower? No. A signal comes from the tower. A signal comes to your body. Signal means what? Actually, it's electromagnetic energy. Let's say some energy, frequencies, vibrations. But is there cancer in these things? No, right? Cancer happens here when certain causes come together, which is the signal and things here. Similarly, the message is a formation that happens when certain causes come together. The signal is one. But without the WhatsApp application, the software, you know, interpreting that signal in a certain way, what good is the signal itself? See, imagine you have a phone, but you don't have the application, and you have the signal, Are you ever going to get the message? Or are you able to get the message out of the signal? You can't. Because, and depending on how you interpret the same signal, different messages will appear. Right? Sometimes, if somebody changes the application, he's changing something in the code, and you install that application, a completely different message will appear on your screen, depending on how the application works. So then, which one is actually in the signal itself? Which of the messages that you see? And why, and what about the cancer? So it makes no sense to say that the signal brings all these things, because cancer happens here, it's a formation. Messages also happens, and I mean that message is nothing more than causes come together to manifest an effect. But you can't give it a source where it comes from. So that actually, next time when you look onto your screen and you see a message, you should question, did this really come from other part of the world? This message that you see? I'm not saying nothing came from the outside world. Of course, a signal came. Of course, a signal came. That's why without a signal, you won't be able to read or perceive a message. I have to say a message. I can't say the message that the signal brought. So it would be wrong for me to say, without the signal, you can't perceive the message. Because there's no the message. The message which is brought, whatever the causes come together, that is the message which appears. And these are two causes. Of course, you know, your phone as well, and the LED is also causes, battery, and other things. So, but the point is just, there must be at least two things that come together to create a resulting effect. So that means, you know, we have to get our head around this idea that nothing comes from anywhere. Which means it is when things come together, where things come together, a certain result manifests. But where? How can you say it came from somewhere? Like, it's like this now. This is a hand. When I do this, a resultant effect called bowl is there, or manifests. But did it come from here or from here? from the sky? No. Right? So now we are going to look at, if you have this video of the lights, do we have that? By Anagarika Mata? There are three videos, I think, or three files, so maybe you can show that video of the colors, the lights. So here you can see the same phenomena again. So again, what were the two lights that she turned on? Red and green. Did she turn on a yellow light? No. But however, yellow is there. So, but not everywhere. Only where red and green overlap, where they meet. Because the resulting effect of these two is what our mind perceives as yellow. Right? Because actually if you look closely, sometimes if you can look closely and closely and closely, you might see that actually there's only red and green dots. But when we look from it from afar, we see yellow. So how is it that when we look far away, we see yellow, but when we look closely and closely and closely, we see only red and green? Can we say that the yellow is actually on the screen? Or is it not only the interpretation of our mind of what it sees. So, however, you just have to understand it is the result and effect of these two things. And now, another thing that we need to understand is we always have this idea of change, right? So, for example, you might feel that this red, which is there, the red circle, part of this red became yellow. So, when we turn on this green knot, are we putting the green to the red, which is already there? Which came first? So when you see this, which came first? The red or the green? Which was there longer on the screen? So does the green go to the red, which is already there? Because that's how we feel, right? We strongly feel there is a red now, and I'm adding the green to the red. But actually, both of these lights, they keep shining out of the source. It keeps happening, right? So when you turn on this green, both the red and the green, both together now come to the screen at the same moment. It's not the red which was still on the screen from the past, right? So that's how we always feel. We feel the red is already there, now I'm adding the green to the red. But as a matter of fact, because all of these are processes which keep flowing, so it's a flow of energy, the green and the red both come to the screen at the same moment. Not one comes to the other. So this is how we usually feel. There is red, and then the green comes and happens to it, and changes the red. Sorry, this is probably, you can't see this, right? Is it visible? The green comes to the red and changes the red, and the red becomes yellow. So the question that I wanted to ask you here is, does something happen to the red? We feel like that. We feel there is a red and now it became yellow. But the red is not something that is actually createdly made on the screen. It has to keep produced. See, you need to keep the light on, and you need to keep feeding the electricity so that these lights shine and shine and shine. But if you stop shining it, immediately the light will disappear. So which means it is these two things meeting at the same moment. None of them is younger or older. Red and green, when they meet, they're both equally old, which means they are just now together. So actually nothing happened to the red. There was not a red which became green, but can you go back to the first moment when we have only red and then we turn on the green? See now, in this moment, is this red made on the screen? In other words, you can just turn off the red light and you'll have a nice red circle there for you to use. Is it like that? No. So that means it keeps happening, it keeps shining. Nothing remains beyond this moment. Right now the light is there. Right now the knob is turned and electricity is there. And these causes produce the red light. But it's keep happening. So when she turns on the green, is it adding the green to the red? As she says, she believes that is what happens. But actually it's not what happens. Is it adding the green to the red? Or is it now new red and new green together create, or manifest, better to say, yellow? Now you can show that. So she's not, is she really adding it to the red? Then this red should be made previously, already done. So she could equally just turn off the red now and just keep putting the green, and then it should become yellow. Is that possible? Can she turn off the red and put on the green and make yellow then? Can't do. Because It is the new light of red which leaves together with the new light of green to create this new effect of yellow. But then is it the previous red which became green? No. So nothing changed. Nothing changed means there was not a red to which something happened. See, this is this idea that something happens to something here, which we strongly feel. I mean, you can understand it in this example because you can understand that why is this important for our lives, of course, is a good question to ask. What has that to do with anything? But see, when we go through life, the way you and me experience the world is that this happens to me. This happens to me right now. This problem happens to me. This experience happens to me. I am the receiver of experience, life, colors, sounds. Right? This is how you feel. And that is the problem. It's actually a fundamental problem of our mind. It feels not, it cannot, it does not feel like a, like the nature, which, because nature is this red. So that means this red can this red exist without the electricity and the lamp? So we can look at it like this. For red, for you to see red, do you need causes or not? Is it something created? Can you just, you know, shine it on the screen and then turn off the lamp? You can't do. So which means it has causes. What are two causes? Lamp. If you remove the lamp, will you still have a red light? No. If you remove the electricity connection, will you have a red light? Electricity or battery? Yeah, either one or the other. I don't know whether it uses electricity, a battery, but either one or the other should be there. So we can see red is not created. This is mother and father of red. Right, so this red has mother and father, because everything in the world has mothers and fathers, which means causes which manifest the effect. Without mother and father, nothing exists. Nothing is simply there. Right, so this red is like this, the green is like this, and the yellow is like this as well. This is not complicated, this is just, you know, understanding that it's not a fixed thing. That means it has mother and father. So, when you understand, so let's come back to this idea of the of turning on this green. How long has this picture been there? This color arrangement that you see, how long has this been there? for 1 minute? Has he made this 1 minute ago? Because if she made it a minute ago, she might have also turned off the electricity, because why do you still need that? If it was made, no need to keep the electricity running. But the fact that you need to have the electricity in this moment means it's actually made in this moment. Made, actually, it's wrong to say made. It means it happens in this moment. But do you feel like that? No, you feel that it happened 10 minutes ago, or not 10 minutes, 2 minutes ago. So, but you need to understand, this is what we feel, this is the story our mind creates, but reality is like that. And now we can apply this, so I think it's enough of this video, now we can apply this same idea of anicca to our experience of the world. Or basically to the functioning of our mind itself. So, let us apply the same concept to our experience of us being here together. So, can you see me? Yes, you can see me. How do you see me? Is there anything more than colors that you can see? So how do you know there's a monk in here? Is it... So because you agree with me that you can see some colors here, right? Colors must be here. But is there also a monk also there? More than the colors, also a monk? And what I mean is, if I give you the liberty to change all the colors that you see in here and do whatever you want with it, but you don't do anything to the monk, will you still have a monk? Let's say you take all the red away and make it white. You take all this color away and you make it green. Will you still find a monk? You don't. Will you find a human? You don't. Will you find man? No. So, in other words, monk is something that comes after the colors. Right? So from colors, monkhood feeling happens in our mind. So actually, only thing you can really see is colors. Because if I can change colors in your mind, and whatever you have perceived, you can no longer perceive it, then we can conclude, from the colors we experience anything else. We experience not more than colors. Does that make sense? Colors is the base for anything. For monk to be here, colors should arrange in a certain way, otherwise you will never perceive a monk. So colors is actually the only thing that you and me can see, or that the mind can see, colors. So now let's think about it. How does colors create? How does color happen? How does the color happen? I mean, some of you might have heard these things many times, but again, it's always good, because there's not much we need to understand, we just have to understand these things, right? So, how does this color that you see happen? This one? Is it on the rope? Is it on the rope? So what it means is, the light, when it reflects from this rope, it brings the red light into your eyes, just like this. Right, the message. The red is the message. The red color here is the message which travels all the way from this rope to yourself, your mind, yourself. That's how we feel. But now we need to apply whether this is really true. So in other words, if it is in, just like if this message is in the signal, if I change the application, should still be able to read the same signal. If I change, I wouldn't need to need any of these other causes. But see, you know what we can do with the colors. We definitely know what comes into our eyes is some sort of a signal, And from there on, a nerve signal travels. This nerve signal, does it carry colors? So does the nerve signal carry the colors from your eye to your brain? What does this nerve signal really carry? Because what you can do is take this nerve signal, take this nerve signal. So there's two nerve signals. One goes like this, and the other one goes like this. If you swap them, what would happen? Light comes into your eyes, and this nerve signal would go to where usually this signal goes. And what will happen is it will be processed in a different way, because there are different processing stations in your brain. One is processing a signal in one way to create a color. One is processing a signal in another way to create a taste. So depending on where in your brain you give electricity to, it'll create different outputs. That's why I can use an electric generator. I just, you know, take a current and I plug it to your brain. You will see colors just the same. That's why they're using these virtual reality things these days. Because in order to make you feel a color, you don't need to, you need to shine a color into your head. If I take some, thing on your head and I just stimulate your brain with certain electricities, I can make you see whatever you want to see, hear whatever you want to hear. All these things are possible because I don't have to give you colors. Actually, I can't. I can just give you electricity. But the right electricity to the right place, and color will happen at the end of this. But when I change the nerves, the same light coming into your eyes will no longer create color, but it will create taste, maybe. Touch. So, another example I had the other day is when you have a hot, when you're in the kitchen and you have a hot plate in front of you, you see the let's say the water boiler. You have boiled some tea, or no, not tea, but some hot water, and you feel that when you touch this kettle, the kettle is really hot. But nothing that travels along your arm is hot. It has electricity, but hotness doesn't travel here. Why? Because the same nerve put to another part of your brain, you will not feel hot, but you might see red, you might see green, you might taste saltiness. Right? So if I touch this kettle, you might feel salty. You might not feel any hot, but you feel salty. So what is the kettle now? Is it salty or hot? The kettle itself, it's not hot, not salty, it's just a kettle. Right? That means it's a bunch of energy which has... So when physicists talk about temperature, what they actually talk about is not hot and cold, but energetic, more vibrating and less vibrating. So this is what temperature really is, right? The temperature meter on the wall can't measure how hot it is. That's why we have this, this experience of when we come into a room and we have been in the outside for a while, we don't feel the temperature the same as if we stay in that room for a while. So we feel it much hotter or colder depending on the situation. Because there's such a thing called the felt temperature. So if you spend a lot of time outside and come into this room, you feel a different sensation than if you were to be in the same room for a while. Which means your body doesn't pick up the temperature of the room or the hot or the coldness of the room itself. It picks up only some kind of a vibration, and then it mixes with the vibrations of your body and many other causes and produces a resulting effect. And whenever you have a resulting effect, you can never say how the individual causes, what their characteristics are. Like the example I like is when you get a cappuccino in the cafe. So you order a coffee or something in the cafe, and you go to this toilet, the washroom. While you're in the washroom, your friends are with you. They're outside. And what they do is they add some sugar to the... They might or might not have added some sugar to the cafe. So what happens is, when you come back from the washroom and you start drinking your cafe, you feel that it's very, very sweet, right? Do you know who put the sweetness inside? Was it your friends or was it the barkeeper? You can't know, right? Because you haven't been there. All you get is the final product. The final product is you get the cafe with whatever the barkeeper has done and whatever your friends have done. And now you have to live with it. But you can never, can you blame your friends for putting the sugar? Maybe they haven't added any sugar. Maybe the barkeeper has added all the sugar. Who knows? So you can't see, that's why these colors that we see are receive contributions from your nerves, eyes, light, and the object. That's why Mahindra always gives this example. If I use orange light to shine on this whiteboard, what color will you see? So when I shine orange light on this whiteboard, you see orange. If I shine red light on this whiteboard, you might see red. So what is the natural color of this whiteboard? What is the intrinsic color this has? Depending on the color you shine on it, you see different colors. Why do we say that this color is the natural one? This gives us the real color of this. See, even in this moment, you don't see the color of this. You see the color of this under the influence of that light. That kind of temperature, light temperature, or this kind of, you know, a little bit yellowish kind of color that we have in this room right now. But you were never able to see the color of this whiteboard itself without the light also playing its own parts. But we do feel that this is natural. But this is only what you see with this light contributing to it. So you again, right now you're getting a cafe. With the friends are the light, and the whiteboard is your barkeeper. So you can't love the barkeeper for the color you see, because the barkeeper hasn't given you this. So you know, we can understand color doesn't really come from the object. It's happening in the mind. And it's not a fixed, I mean, this is the same example as the example in this video. If I ask you the question, how long has this been there? See, all the colors that you see right now, so take a moment to look around the room. All the colors you see right now are there for how long? Right now. Then tell me, how old is this? When you look into your mirror and you see, you might have, you might look in your hand and feel like, this is a bit old. This is getting older. You might see wrinkles in your face. You might see various things. White strand of hair. So can you see something older than another? I mean, any of the colors you see, for example, I mean, we do feel that things have different ages. I mean, the best example is, you know, you just look at your hair, look at your face, you feel this is, you can tell oldness to the colors you see, to what you see around you. So you see, if I'm not mindful, I feel that you have different ages. Some of you are young, some of you are old. But I'm seeing only colors. At the end of the day, colors are the only thing, and they're all born in this moment. So how old is white? How old is green? How old is black? How young? How old? These are not old, these are not young, these are just colors. But because of this aggregation process which happens in our mind, right? The mind aggregates a lot of colors, then it goes into the memory, and it connects this thing to memories, and now it creates a story. So it can create a feeling of young and old. So to understand this, we are going to look at another picture, which is the picture of the woman. You might know this, but it's still very good to understand how we are being tricked by our mind if we don't understand what really happens. So, you might know this picture, but however, there's a lot to learn from this picture. See, what we can all agree on, first of all, is that we see colors, right? We understand the colors are there. But normally, there's more than colors that we can see. So if, for example, see, there's a part of this picture which has a certain shape like this. So I can't go there and show you. I'll just try to draw it. In the worst case, I'll go and show you, but it goes like this. This part. Can you see this part? This part, yes, exactly. Now I ask you, is it young or old? Is it young or old? Because some of you will say it's very old, Swamina Hanse. Sorry, it's very young. It's very young because what is it? This is the chin of a young woman, right? So it's young. So you see youngness. When you look at this, you see something young is there. There on the screen, something young exists. Some of you will see that. Who can see the youngness? Can someone see the young? I can see it. Can you see the young lady looking to the distance? We can't see her face, her eyes. We can see her nose. The nose is somewhere above. Right? But you feel that there is something young there. But some other people in here in the audience, some of you, if I ask you, is it young or old? You might say, no, it's very old. Why? Because it is the nose of an old lady, right? So which one is it? Because it should be one or the other. It can't be both. Reality must be objective. Either it is young or it is old. If something is old for one and young for another, what's the meaning of that? It has no meaning. So that means if some of you say it's old and some of you say it's young, then can we actually say that young or old is here in this picture? Or isn't this simply the way that your mind experiences or aggregates all these different informations into an aggregation or a whole? And based on the whole, it feels young or old, based on memories and all these things, right? So even for you to feel that it is old, you must have some views. I mean, even when you see the young lady, an alien coming to the earth, if I ask an alien who comes just on this earth, he has never seen a human before, and I show him a so-called young woman like this, would he be able to know it's young? Or she's tall or small? Because he doesn't have any reference to compare. In other words, he doesn't have a view to which he can compare and say this is young or old. Because again, it's not in the picture. It's a feeling created in the mind. So young and old are actually what you see. When you see the youngness, the question is, see, do you see the picture? Do you see that? Or don't you experience your own mind? Youngness or oldness? As an example, similarly, femaleness, maleness are not in the picture. And when I ask you this question, so what the mind does, see, even our perception of big and small are also things which only we feel. So for example, if you look at this, you might immediately feel this is bigger than this. Because we feel that this is an L. So this L is also an aggregation. Because what you actually can see here are points. Nothing more. What is the shape of a point? A point has no shape. A point is not big. A point is not small. It's just a point. But aggregated, we can say small or big. But what we need to understand is that we perceive these things. That means these are not in the outside world. These are created after a process of aggregation. Right. So this is a good example to show you that. Because if I, another way to explain it is, if this is young, if this chin is young, if I remove it and put it somewhere else, will you still feel youngness? Because actually the only thing which are there are colors. So the youngness happens based on your memories and shapes that you have seen or shapes that you know, these views create a perception. But whenever we feel that their youngness is there, that's when the problem starts. Because now we feel the colors are there in the world, young, old things exist. Right? So in the same way, you look into the room, you might say there are different people who have different ages, and I have seen them before. So, if I'm not mindful, I'll say, I saw some of you before. But how can I say I'm seeing you? Because the only thing I can see are colors. How long are these colors there? Has a color already been there before? This green, has it here been here before? This green you're seeing in this moment, it is just produced, just now. So, that means right now causes come together, a lot of causes come together to manifest a feeling of a eraser. Maybe because of the knowledge and the memory, we can say, oh, of course, last week I used this. See, when we don't... So that happens because it's the aggregation process. So the aggregation process can use memory and give this knowledge that it creates this nice story. Yes, that last week I used this. And if you don't know that this aggregation process happens, you really, really feel that you are here and you have used this before. And now you are actually... Now you have... Whenever we feel that you have used this before, now in 5 minutes we are going to conclude, but now I'll sum it all up, why I talked about this mother and father thing. When you feel you have used this before, you feel that you are a person. And a person the same person was there last week, the same duster was there last week, the same colors were there last week. So in other words, neither the duster nor do I need a mother or father. So these colors which I'm seeing right now, they don't need a mother and father, and I don't need a mother and father to be there. Which means causes, right? But when you understand these colors manifest right now because of causes coming together, when you can see that there must be causes present in this moment, now you have seen your mother and father. That means actually you know that you are not a person. You are just seeing. Right now you are seeing, or seeing happens. When seeing happens, there's no such thing called seeing something out there, because again, colors don't come from the outside world, and there's no one who the seeing happens to, right? Colors don't come to someone, colors happen. Seeing happens, just like this when these two colors meet, yellow happens. It's not the green that happens to the red and changes into yellow. That is a fake illusion. So similarly, these are not colors to you, but seeing happens. And when you can see that you are just the seeing that happens in this moment, then what about your past, your future, you are not a person in this moment. You're not someone who sees something in this moment. Seeing it happens. And when you realize that there's no such thing called past and future, it's only a aggregated perception of, basically it's just a story, an aggregation, that is created in this moment because of causes, right? Whenever we realize that this is just a story, what it means is this is a story manifesting because of causes in this moment. So that means no one is doing that. No one is experiencing it. It's just happening. A feeling of existence happens, or a feeling of separation happens, or a feeling of eraser happens. But it is an effect of causes in this moment. So now what you have done is you have touched the point to realize that everything has causes. You have seen mother and father, and then you don't feel past, present, and future, then you can't have any expectations. In no way you can have any expectations. See, whatever happens to you, you always feel it happens to you. So then, this is not what I wanted. So whenever you feel that there was something that you... See, I didn't want to see this. I want to see something else. But if you are just the seeing that happens because of this and the light and the brain and the other things, how are you to choose? How can you say that you were already there before this happened, before this came in contact with your eyes? You are not there before this happened. You don't have a past to say that you wanted something else to experience. And when you can touch this idea that you are just an effect, you will know that, yes, you might say, this is not what I wanted to see, but what's actually speaking is an aggregation right now, because of memory and other things, a feeling is created. But there's no person that has a view or an expectation or a preference. And similarly, whenever you feel that there's something I want tomorrow, all you really need to bring your awareness to is to realize that what you're experiencing is not a person who has a future. You're experiencing a mind which arises because of causes in this moment and because of memories. It can create the story of a future. And when this jati beast happens, when this jati happens, it mistakes this aggregation to be existence. So it thinks the story is actually real. So this effect of jati, what it does is it creates this feeling that eraser is there, because of not knowing about anicca. Whenever you can clearly get the point of anicca, you will immediately spot the ignorance in jati, which is the idea that this green is already here for a while. Then you know it can't be true, it can't be here, so then it must be only a feeling. And then that means you don't have to change anything, you just have to understand clearly what I tried to explain you with this point of anicca, using this example, as well as the lights. Nothing has a past, always everything is in effect of causes in this moment, nothing can be created beyond this moment, it's always new causes, then there's nothing called change. Right? So right now causes align a certain way, giving rise to an effect, and when different causes align in a different way, giving rise to a different effect, but not this changed into another. So nothing happens to you. There's an aggregated perception manifesting right now. But because of jati, a feeling of separation happens. When you can see jati, you are done. Because jati is also an effect. So when I'm taking dana, what I'm practicing is simply, see, when you're eating, you feel that you're eating with the same hand all the time. Right? So your hand is always there, constant, while you're eating. The food in your hand changes, but the hand is always there. But how old is this hand when you look at it? This hand is born in this moment. Because the colors that you see are born in this moment. So the hand is actually a good point of contemplation when you are eating. Because you can see the hand all the time. But it means actually you're not seeing your hand. Colors are formed and the perception of a hand happens. That perception is a natural incident. It doesn't belong to anyone. The perception, the seeing, happens. And when you understand that this is only a perception of a hand, you are no longer, you're not there. You don't own anything. Then you're so free. Because if whenever you feel that you're looking at your hand, you are suffering a lot. Because you have ownership of a hand, which means you're going to suffer so much. Because you have expectations wherever. You will always have an expectation. May this hand be well. May it not suffer. If this is your hand, there will always be vexation. But if you don't have a hand, but this is just a seeing of a hand, or seeing of hand happens, that seeing doesn't belong to anyone, the colors don't belong to anyone, and this is just a natural incidence. You have nothing to maintain. So, or another way I use is my glasses. Actually, I realized yesterday, these glasses are always with me. So when I feel, I have said they are always with me, actually, nonsense. That's how we feel. That's a perception. When I look through these glasses, I see these boundaries. How long am I wearing these glasses? Are these the same glasses I wore yesterday? And have I been wearing this for 2 hours? No, I'm wearing these glasses right now only. In other words, this is also seeing. Seeing happens right now. Seeing and perception of a glasses. But these are not my glasses on my face. Because there's no such thing called my face. It's only energy that I can't see, but I can. But with the help of this energy, a perception of a face happens. That's what happens when you look into the mirror. You see colors. Nothing old, nothing young, nothing beautiful, nothing ugly, nothing female or male. And when a pimple happens when teenagers get a pimple, they think it happened to my face. So in other words, the pimple came here, but all the rest is something that has been there before. So I have this face, but the pimple is new, the face is already older. But which other colors are new? The pimple color or this color? Which of them have been there longer? When a teenager looks into the mirror, sees a pimple, she feels, it came yesterday, this morning, when I woke up, but this year, it's been there already. But actually, these two colors are same old, just now. So that's only a feeling of the aggregation. So this is only an aggregation. So then, it's just a seeing event. You don't, it's not your face. The colors don't come from your face to you, but colors manifest. They don't belong to anyone. And so you understand how simple it is to live a life without burden, which is without anything to maintain. Because a face, if you own a face, then I can tell you, happy birthday. As in, that's yours to maintain. How much do you have to maintain your face? For the beauty's sake? For the health's sake? I mean, for existing happily sake? Okay, so let's finish for today. Let's transfer our merits. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have all acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas, and upasikas who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and have passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand, and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Nohanse and all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May, through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May, through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer these merits, the merits that we have acquired, to our devotees, friends of the monastery who, for the sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, ropes and medicines, as well as those who passed on their know-how and extend their well wishes. May, through power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us and assisted us in every way, shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakra Deva as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May, through the power of these merits, they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors, those who have predeceased us, to all those who have been our family and friends and acquaintances in this infinite long journey of samsara, and who have helped us and supported us and assisted us in every way they could. Let us transfer these merits. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police forces who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we've acquired today. This also transfers mails to all those who lost their lives to natural calamities, such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been families and friends to us in this journey of samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits to them. May the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Finally, let us all resolve that, may through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may through the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who has helped to make this program a success, become Narata Nohanse and Arahat Mini Nohanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Now the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnin midatnva Dvesha ginnin midatnva Moha ginnin midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu sattvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sapa labheva Nivan sapa labheva Nivan sapa labheva Tunurvange Suvisi Ananta Mahaguna Belen Siyala Loka Siyala Satyo Nibbana Paramasukhin Sukhitara Vetta Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.